Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Movies and booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks in a line.
The martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
It's time for Movies and Booze. Zara Hederman, Serena Bellissimo and Linda Coogan join us once again. Good afternoon to you all.
Hello.
You've done a very clever thing, Linda, Angel and Devil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Though they look similar in the glass.
They look the same.
Well, that's probably me. I'm probably half blind, but I can't see the distinct differences between the two of them.
They look the same in the glass, but one's an angel and one's a devil.
Okay.
And, you know, which shoulder are they on? We don't know. So we kind of have a taste of them blind and see which you think, because when you take away packaging, you know what's inside the bottle, because we do buy with our eyes a lot, don't we?
Yeah, without a doubt. Pretty bottle.
It's pretty bottle, the name, you see it around, you see it on social media, you see it being influenced, and then there's kind of, it's really interesting. So getting rid of the bottles, the shapes of them, the design of them, all the lingo jingo on the back, and seeing what we think of the wines.
And all the marketing as well.
Big time.
You know,
big
that kind of Cloudy Bay effect, you know.
Yep. And the two makers that originally made Cloudy Bay, Kevin Judd and Ivan Sutherland, their two wines that they make independently now, Grey Wacky and Dog Point, are insanely good. Whereas Cloudy Bay has still got this huge reputation, but the two independent winemakers, when they did their own thing, amazing stuff is produced.
Yeah, because I don't know if they did it deliberately, but they do this thing where Cloudy Bay would disappear off the shelves for a while and then suddenly, oh, Cloudy Bay is back. And you saw people beating each other to death with their Versace handbags to get their hands on it.
Back in the 90s, you were only allowed a small allocation of it. And it was in the VIP in Lily's for a time as well. You know, it was kind of like that, taking us back a little while. So it's marketing is fantastic. I'll be curious to see what you think about these.
Yeah, everybody in Lily sniffing as they drank the Cloudy Bay. No idea. There must have been a cold going around there, I'm assuming. So, Zara, like, before you talk about the film, a piano tuner who cracks safe, genius concept.
Yes.
That's like, that. If I was an investor, that would have my millions immediately.
Yeah.
The other one, Backrooms.
Yeah.
Now, you'd be talking about the film later on, but explain the kind of online thingy. Is this a meme? Is it a, what is it?
It began as a creepypasta, which is like a viral.
Whoa! Okay. Okay. In English, please.
Yeah. So that is an online viral story that is like a horror story, essentially. So the Backrooms.
Why is it called a pasta?
Because it's like, I don't know, spaghetti. I don't know.
Right. Okay. Your generation just use these words. Like, well, you know what I mean.
I didn't,
of course,
invent the term. I don't
know.
But there's loads of them. So Slenderman is another one, which was also made into a film a couple of years ago. So the Backrooms are these liminal spaces. So it's typically like these like abandoned buildings. They often look like, you know, airports or office blocks.
Okay.
They're typically yellow. So my bathroom is yellow. So after seeing this, it was very terrifying to go to the loo.
Right.
There's also like no like figures there that you can see, but you can sense that there are entities there.
So in like, so on these online, little online films that would be just of these kind of abandoned spaces, yeah, that seemed a bit creepy. And would anything, would they have a narrative of any sort, or would they just be
not particularly like
creepy? Sarah's creepy bathroom.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, out of context, like, you could walk down a road and it could have like a bend in it and it could just look a bit sinister. And you could be like, oh, this looks like a back room, because you don't know where it's leading to. And there could be something around the corner. But it's a hugely, hugely popular thing online. There's like 350,000 members on the Reddit Backrooms subreddit.
Wow.
Just posting pictures.
And this fella's only 20, Kane Parsons?
Only 20. And it came from...
You're all failures. You do know that.
Yeah.
We're all failures.
Also known as Kane Pixels on YouTube. So he began a series on YouTube when he was 16 years old, where he was making these short films based on the original image of the back room that became viral.
Genie Mac. Yeah. And the piano tuner turned safecracker. Now, it's not his... But he's made documentaries before, this chap, but like, this is his first kind of feature.
Yeah, thing. I was really shocked to see the documentaries he made were one about Robbie Robertson and the band and Alexei Navalny, which won an Oscar.
Yeah.
So he's turned his hand at narrative feature work. And as you said, the premise is great. Like, I was quite excited for this. He tries, unfortunately, to do too many different things in 107 minutes. Like, I was watching this and I was like, this could make a great TV series, because it has loads of different elements where you want fleshed out that don't necessarily have the time to do so.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, is it going to be like Keeping Up with the Celine Dions, this new series?
Well, it can't be. So, what we're talking about is Celine Dion is finally getting a family TV series. And when you see that, you think of Keeping Up with the Kardashians. But no, they're actually going back to her original story of how she got into pop. But more than just about Celine, because her story is actually quite interesting. She has 14 brothers and sisters, like, she's one of 14.
Wow.
She's very close to her mother. So it's going to be all about her growing up. So it's not going to be reality TV. But this is something that they've wanted to do. Well, the studios have wanted to do for a while, but the family have always just said no, no, no. But her brother is Jacques Dion is actually involved. He and his her nephew, Jimmy Dion, is going to be writing it too. So I'm interested. I'm going to now. In saying that, they're still shopping this around. But
so there'll be actors playing the part rather than it won't be.
Because it'll be about
see.
Their childhood.
Yeah.
But like, it hasn't been bought. But in saying that, if someone comes up to you and goes, "I've got a story about Celine Dion," I think people will buy it blind without even seeing scripts and stuff.
Well,
but I think
they haven't sold it already then.
Yeah. Mm. Well, maybe it just hasn't gone to market. But I love what Jacques, the brother, has said. He said that this series represents something deeply meaningful for our family, as it captures the spirit, struggles and love that defined our upbringing. We are proud to finally share this story with the world in a way that feels true to who we are. So I am interested to see this.
Well, as long as somebody gives them a load of money, they'll share the story.
And we've had the reality side of it. Like, if you haven't seen the Celine documentary on Prime Video.
And how's her health now?
Well, apparently, so she has been dealing with stiff person syndrome, but they're saying that she's back in good health. And if you watch that documentary, you did like a part of it. Everyone was brought to tears where you actually see her having an episode.
Mm.
And then she played in Paris and everyone was wondering, is she going to be able to do the opening ceremony? She blew everyone away. But now they're saying she's coming back and she's possibly going to do a tour soon.
Okay. All right. Well, good for her.
Yeah. So it's good to see her back. And I'll be watching that.
Yeah. And Bad Bunny's going to be in Toy Story 5.
Now,
wow.
I'm excited about this anyway. But with Bad Bunny, he is playing a forgotten toy known as Pizza with Sunglasses. He's effortlessly cool and a mysterious character who is a member of a small but mighty toy community, a mighty community of forgotten toys that live in an abandoned backyard shed. I think I can't wait to see that.
Okay, when's that going to come out?
That's soon. That's the 19th of June.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And do you know what, Sean? You know how I feel about sequels. I've had enough of them, but I think this one could be interesting because this one, they're actually going to look at the impact that digital toys have on traditional toys. So I think this could be quite good.
Mm. But Toy Story haven't made a bad sequel, really.
They haven't. And that's a
no, you could rate them, but you couldn't say any of them were poor.
You still come out crying after all of them, going, how did they do that again? Like, it should, the story should be finished. But I think what they do really cleverly is they bring back the people we love, but move the story along. They're not stuck in a certain place. And I think that's why it's working. And as adults and even the kids who are going through it, we've all been through different stages and stuff. So, yeah, I can't wait. The 19th of June.
Actually, yeah, who do all the toys belong to now at this stage of the game? Because
are they out?
The original kids are in their 20s.
And they gave it to Bonnie. YouTube channel. For a while it was with Bonnie. Did they go to the... Did I make it up when I said they went to a creche?
They did go to a creche in the second one.
Yeah.
And then in the fourth one...
Oh, no, but creches were dangerous places for toys, really. You'd be ripped apart.
The fourth one, there's like an antique shop where Bo Peep is.
And they're trying to rescue. So the fourth one was a rescue mission, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then they...
The fourth one wasn't my favourite.
Yeah, Buzz and Bo Peep go off like hobos to ride the rails at the end of that
and
film.
And Keanu Reeves.
Woody and Bo Peep.
Or Woody, I should say, yes.
And Keanu Reeves comes into it. Actually, talking about people coming into it, Alan Cumming is also joining. Oh. Yep. He's going to be voicing the evil Bullseye.
Love it.
So, okay.
I think this could be fun. In a few weeks' time, I think hopefully we'll all be raving about this.
Okay. All right. That's to be looking forward to. Right. Okay. So, Linda, tell us which wine do we drink first? Is it the one on our left or
left
the other
on
left?
Your left, because they're so
there's
distinctively
left.
Different.
Yeah.
Get that left. Okay. So, yeah, the thing is, they are both of the pale variety. So, are you into your pale rosés or do you like the deeper colours? Because, I mean...
Is there a difference?
Yeah.
They're much more pronounced.
Thank you for saying that, really. Yeah.
Loads of people are only into these pale Provence style, really, really delicate looking, almost kind of salmon colour. Mm. And other people like really, really deep, bright ones. Okay, so sticking your nose in, what are you getting here? So one of these is iconic, has kind of put Provence on the map. And the other one is kind of taking the mickey out of this a little bit. Okay, so... They both have a time and place, 100%. What are you getting? Come on, tell me something. Citrus, strawberry, it's quite delicate, isn't it? You're like, nodding along.
Yeah, absolutely,
Alcohol.
I mean,
it's
getting wine. Yeah.
It's kind of sharp.
It's kind of sharp, okay.
Yeah. Do you want us to tell you, like, wood,
tell me
chocolate?
Anything.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Glue.
What are you getting?
Okay, so I'm getting a zest of citrus freshness there. Mm-hmm. I'm getting, this is hilarious, I'm picturing here like, you know, a summer linen shirt, my khakis there, seeing a guy there having a glass of rosé. Rosé's for everybody. Oversized glasses, Chanel bag.
You can taste all of that.
Wow, they packed a lot in there.
This is so funny. Loads of people are marketing with that kind of language now, saying you're drinking a sunshine in a glass, you know, all these sunny days, and it's like, come on. Anyway, hilarious. So I'm getting more citrus notes, delicate, very, very delicate kind of strawberry, a little bit of cranberry here. Mm-hmm. Don't use.
Yep.
So food pairing wise, I mean, it's sun in a glass. Like rosé is for me all year round. I don't have to have a bit of sun.
What's the name of this one?
Can't tell you yet.
Oh, right. Okay. Sorry. Okay.
Can't
sorry.
Tell
She's
you
building
yet.
Up the tension. Yeah.
But
okay.
Again, it's just, it's very drinkable. Your sense a little bit sharp. So that's.
I'm with Zara.
Okay. It's very sharp.
It does something to like the jaws and tongue.
That would be the handbag. It kind of sticks in the back of the throat.
Is that because this needs some ice in it? Do you think if it's much colder, it would taste differently?
It is cold now, but I didn't hear you say that. Okay. Oh. No, I know everybody puts ice in their wine.
Yeah.
Don't they?
Yeah.
Admit it.
I don't.
Okay, good one.
No, I don't.
Serena, you obviously do. You have to say that live on radio.
No, I have it really, really... Actually, yes. If it's not really, really cold, I'll throw some ice
and
in there.
But if it's really, really cold, all you taste is cold wine. Like all the stuff that Linda's been saying there is gone, really, if it's too cold. You know, if you do that, like bung it in the freezer for an hour and then you forget it's there and then it's rock solid.
Well, you're just drinking it for you're just drinking it for the alcohol and buzz and a little bit of flavour.
No, I'm just to cool me down.
Okay, so you, like loads of people do freeze the life. It gets
in
rid
really
of the aromas.
Glass.
And, of course, not like these little tasting glasses. Yeah. Sean, you have gorgeous glasses.
Yes, thank you. They're not mine. I don't know.
They might have been borrowed from in a different studio, I think. So again, Provence style rosé. Both of these are from the same region, yet they do taste quite different. Think of sitting by the sea, you know, and you've got your mezze plate, you've got your salads, you've got your nibbles. Yum. Yeah. So at the moment, you think it's too sharp. Are you getting any of that kind of strawberry fruit? Okay. I didn't make these. So I wanted to do a blind tasting because it's the 50th anniversary of the Judgment of Paris. Have you ever heard of that? Sean, you have?
Yeah, I have. It was after World War II and they had all these Nazi winemakers. No, it wasn't. Oh, no, okay. No. I think it was the first time a non-European wine won medals and stuff.
So, yeah, it's basically a British wine merchant went to America, brought back American wines to France, to Paris, and got them tasted by a French panel of experts. And it was surprising, the results. But a movie called Bottle Shock, have you seen that one? Was inspired by that event 50 years ago. So that happened this week, 50 years ago. So it's like a blind tasting that shook up the world. And this blind tasting may shake up the world as well.
Yes, okay, there we go.
Okay, so we can try the next wine later and I'll reveal all.
Okay, all right. One texter says, many years ago, students used to put red food dye into white wine and ask people which tasted better, the red or the white.
Yeah, they did things like that in supermarkets where they actually, you know, and they're like, oh, it tastes like red blackberries and all that, but it was actually wine with colours in it.
Yeah.
So your eyes deceive you and you kind of see, again, if you're told this is strawberry, oh yeah, I can get that a bit now. You know what I mean? It is very. And if I tell you this bottle is such and such and a story, you will buy into it a little bit. Not the glasses and the Chanel and the linen shirt, not really, but you know.
Was it Cliff Richard, though, who did the blind tasting and they gave him his own wine and he said it was rotten?
That was so funny.
David in Galway says, Alan Cumming has a perfume called, you guessed it, Cumming. Another one came out afterwards called Second Cumming. True story, says David.
He's brilliant.
It's brilliant. So, name.
Speaking of Alan Rickman is in Bottle Shock and he alone is worth watching the movie.
Oh,
he's amazing in it.
Right. Would you like to do, which movie would you like to do first, Sarah?
Maybe we go Backrooms because there's more to talk about with Tuner.
All right. Scary Backrooms coming up after this.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
I found something in the store.
Okay. What did you find?
It's what I'm trying to figure out.
Keep up.
It only gets better.
You got the camera, right? You can borrow it again.
You still haven't told us what we're doing here, man.
I did tell you. Research.
What the fuck?
All these places and buildings, rooms, misremembering themselves. It's a real mess. But also beautiful, in a way. No.
Clark, where are we?
There you go. That was Backrooms. It's in cinemas today. Apart from the scary noises, they could be just two lads going down there to do a bit of cleaning.
Absolutely. And like, there's some areas within the Backrooms that do need a good scrub.
Yeah.
Like, some of the areas are filthy and terrifying.
Oh.
But it's a really interesting concept because I've seen descriptions of this, of people saying it's like the Blair Witch Project meets Severance, or my personal favourite, The Shining set in an infinite travelodge.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's basically, we heard Clark there, played by Chidiwell Ejiofor, who, he's going through a pretty tough time in his personal and professional life. He's a failed architect. He owns this failing furniture store and his wife has also kicked him out. So not a great time for him.
But he owns a furniture store, so it's some place to sleep.
Exactly. Well, he literally is sleeping there. So yes. But there's one day he's downstairs in his furniture store and he notices something a bit kind of funny with like flickering lights, and then he touches the wall, which leads him into this new dimension, the back rooms.
Okay.
So everything is like if you've watched Severance, it's very like that, very stark, random kind of furniture bits kind of piled up in the areas. And he's curious about this because, as you would be, you've just fallen through a wall in your work. So he starts to explore it and he kind of is hearing things. He's seeing different things in there.
And does he stay there or can he come back in and sell a bit of furniture during the day?
Yes. Okay. So it is, it's good in that way where, it's easy to access.
Yeah.
So what was great about this as well, it's set in 1990, which works because Clark doesn't have a smartphone where he can't easily record it or Google anything about it, go onto Reddit and see what people are saying about it. So he enlists his two employees who are also filmmakers on the site to go with them. So they tie like rope around themselves to explore the back rooms. Things happen, which cause quite a lot of missing person cases in this area. And all the while, he is going to see a therapist played by Renata Reinsva, who we've seen so much, like in Sentimental Value. He's going to see her and he starts to tell her about the back rooms that he's found. He's drawn them out for her and she's a little bit perplexed, but she also has her own kind of historical trauma that makes her a bit more kind of
forthcoming.
Exactly, yeah. So she goes to explore this back room as well. Now, what we have then on top of that is, because you're all the while, you're like, what is this place like? Mm. Because there's a man who is watching them. And we learn that there's kind of, as all good horror films have, some medical kind of malpractice going on. So that is very like steadily teased out and keeps you kind of gripped because there's not a whole lot of dialogue really in this. Like a lot of it is Clark exploring this place. And as he's doing it, his kind of psyche, we kind of can see, is maybe playing some kind of tricks on him as well because he's going through such a difficult time. It looks really good. Like the first 10, 15 minutes of this, it kind of goes between handycam, found footage stuff, kind of an ode to what Kane Parsons was doing with the YouTube series, to the point that I felt extremely nauseous in the cinema and I thought I was going to have to run out.
Oh.
Yeah. No, it was quite disorientating. So they captured that essence of the back rooms very well. The sound design is great. So for the first hour, I was quite gripped by this. The performances are really good. Unfortunately, the last 15 minutes of it kind of loses the run of itself.
No.
And you can really see how this is a 20-year-old first-time filmmaker, which was unfortunate because it had so many great elements to it. Now, in saying this as well, like the story behind this is kind of remarkable. So Kane Parsons, as you said, is 20 years old. So he's going to be the youngest filmmaker that A24 have put a film out on. Early on, we had James Wan, Osgood Perkins and Sean Levy. They're all involved as executive producers. They're all huge names in horror. And one of the big things about this film is that it's expected to make between $40 to $50 million on its opening weekend. So to kind of quantify that, like the Scream franchises, they're such a huge name. They would generally garner that. And this is a first time filmmaker doing something based on a, as we said, creepypasta.
But he's already got an audience, his creepypasta
big time because even the original video, and you can find it on YouTube, like the short videos, the original one was posted a couple of years ago, only 4 years ago, has 79 million views. And he has become like the pioneer basically of the Backrooms lore because, as I said, there's like 24 different episodes of the Backroom series that he made. And they're kind of similar in like what we get at the start of this film where he has characters in it. It's also set in the 90s. So really fascinating and just kind of, I love the get up and go kind of about it.
Yeah. But I suppose it's the difference between the online stuff is that he didn't need a narrative there. It's just look at this atmospheric place. Whereas now he needs a beginning, middle and an end, and ends are always notoriously difficult.
Big time. And also has to deal with, you know, dialogue and, you know, character arcs. Now, the characters are well developed. Like Clark is well developed and you do kind of, you feel for him for what he's going through. They're not a Reinsva character. They try to kind of build this character who also has her own trauma and we're like brought into that a little bit. I wish that had been fleshed out more because that was quite an interesting story as to why you know, she became then this really successful therapist. Like, what's great as well with the 90s thing, there's so many like TV ads where she's selling like a book and she's like promoting it and all this kind of stuff. So I wish that she...
Of course, to you, the 90s was a long time ago, wasn't it?
Well, I was born in the beginning of it.
20 years ago, wasn't it?
I thought it was last week.
But yeah, it had so much potential, and it's like one that all my friends are so excited to see. So I felt really bad saying doesn't quite get the landing, but it will scare you. Like, yeah, I was it will tense. Scare
you. Right, Off Campus season 2. Have they even finished season 1 yet?
Oh yeah, yeah. And it's raiding through the roof. I mean, look, this is really cheesy. If you don't know what Off Campus is, it's the latest young adult series to come out of Prime Video. It's based on all the students are in college. The girl is a music student, and of course the boy, her love interest is a hockey player.
Who's only pretending to be, isn't
that? No, is a hockey player.
No, I mean, he's pretending to be going out with her to make somebody else jealous.
Tell me more. How much do you know about this?
No, but isn't this just like all this is like a load of people in a room going, okay, heated rivalry, how can we do that?
Well, interestingly, I would have said yes, because heated rivalry is amazing and really took off. But this series is apparently huge on TikTok, like on BookTok. It is a series that has, I think, 7 or 8, there's quite a few books in it. As a result, there will be more episodes to come. And like Heated Rivalry, this focuses on a different character, different couple each time. Mm. It's no surprise to say that the characters they're focusing on are Ali Hayes and Dean De Laurentiis, because basically at the end of the press tour, the series creator, Louisa Levy, actually said, yep, the 8 scripts have been done and these are who our main characters are going to be. So I was very confused today when my social feed has been filled going, it's been confirmed. Yeah, we know. But anyway, everyone's very excited that they're going to come back. And the characters, I mean, Off Campus has been really successful for Prime Video. And Mika Abdallah, who plays Ali, I love her, but in season 1, she had a moment where she was dressed in the Jennifer Lopez dress. Remember that Grammys dress that she wore? Yeah, that green dress. So she did that. She had a moment that she went to a costume party in the show. This week, another viral moment, her and J-Lo actually hooked up did a little performance to that, and it's brilliant. So I can't wait. I don't know when it's coming out. I'm assuming that filming will start soon, because the 8 episodes have been written. And for anyone who's worried that we're not going to see a lot of Hannah and Garrett, who were this season's couple, they've said not to worry. They will play a part. They just won't be as big as they were in season 1.
Okay, right. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on Newstalk. We do have to take a break. After that, more movies and booze. Zara, Serena and Linda are still with us to discuss car mechanics in detail. But, you know, we've exhausted that subject, really. Let's move on to our second one, Linda.
Excellent. Okay, so this is a completely different colour. It's exactly the same pale Provence-style colour. So sticking your nose in, it is a little bit more in your face, this one. The other one was more delicate and muted. This is a little bit more expressive. For me, I'm getting watermelon sugar lemonade type of thing, and candied fruit, so a little bit more ripe fruit. And then users saying when you're tasting it, you're getting the kind of honey note off this.
Yeah.
So sweeter, riper, that kind of thing. So the other one was more of a whisper, and this is more of a shout or a scream. Do you like that? So which is which?
Oh, boom, boom. Yeah.
So yes, the first one is in fact the iconic 20th vintage Whispering Angel, marketer's dream, angels on the label, and you know, it says on the back of it, in the Esklin Valley, with angels whisper, if you drink this wine, you might hear them. If you visit us, you might see them.
Wow.
I'll leave that there.
Sod off. What country is that? It's New Zealand.
No, Côte de Provence in France.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
Riviera, beautiful
maybe
people.
It sounded
you know?
More whimsical in French than it does in
maybe
English.
Maybe it does.
Possibly. Translation.
Yeah, you should have said that in a French accent.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. Ooh la la, no. Okay, and the second one, what I love the name, Screaming Devil. So a whispering angel and screaming devil. Look inside the bottle, if you can see. I know the listeners can't, but there is a picture of like a vampire lady passing around there.
Okay, and she's got, that's clever.
Yeah. Incredible. So the other thing about this second bottle is it's a you know, totally different shape, but it's tall and it has a glass closure. So people are keeping this for
water. Oh, that's lovely. Yeah.
You know?
Sustainable.
So, very sustainable. So yeah. I just thought, you know, people buy Whispering Angel because they completely hear about it. Everyone that's on Instagram, it's got amazing marketing. The juice is fine. It's grand. I think there's a place for both of these wines. But the Screaming Devil is a little bit more riper, a bit, you know, more commercially appealing, I suppose, and it's totally a dupe on that, like, do you know?
Yeah, so, and are they made in more or less the same neck of the woods?
They're made literally beside each other. Huh. But the Whispering Angel, they would own a lot of their own vineyards as well, so they'd control the whole lot. The second one would be bought grapes from the region.
Right, yeah.
So there is a chateau associated with Whispering Angel, whereas this would be a co-op producer just making it for.
I assume they're calling this great. Their tongue is very much in their cheek when they're doing that. They know exactly what they're at.
Yeah. So this is fairly new. The Screaming Devil is new. And I just saw it and I thought it was really fun. And I like when things are shaken up a little bit, like the Judgment of Paris, when things that are expected to be particular way and it's rocked up by, you know, the underdogs. Mm. So that's what I love seeing happen sometimes. So place for everyone. And Kylie's rose, I need to get a mention. Sabrina, you're like, oh my God, Kylie. I forgot to do Kylie's because she's how old?
She's 57 today.
Is Kylie. She? Oh, yeah. Happy birthday.
Sorry,
Kylie.
I forgot to do your wine.
And her bottle, like, you're talking about marketing and stuff. Yeah. Yes,
she was 58 yesterday, I'm told.
I thought it was the 28th.
And sorry, we have a whole team of Kylie checkers. Yeah.
Sorry, it's today's the 29th. Yes, she was 28.
Yeah.
How much of that have you had there?
Oh my God, it was the 28th. But anyway, do you know, as
and it's been confirmed. She was 28 yesterday. Yeah. Again.
But her bottle is amazing.
It's stunning.
Yeah,
it's
and cool. That's what I know Kylie drew me to it and I was going to taste it regardless. But if you're looking to give someone a gift, it's a great gift to give because it's got like, it's almost bezel? Oh, I don't know what it's called.
Embossed. It's almost embezzled. Yeah.
Move on. She's 28 and
you're not. Obviously, she isn't a winemaker. She just goes like Graham Norton and that and will go oh, this is nice. This is
apparently
nice.
Apparently, she's very involved in her winemaking.
I'm sure she is.
But she's not saying it about Kylie.
Oh, no, I'm not.
That was yesterday.
Her feet have never seen a grape. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. But she does go travelling around to promote it very much. I think it's a very clever move.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, celebrity wines.
Ah, you know? Yeah. Sure. I think, like, everyone has one, really.
Yeah.
But they're variable, as we know. Right. Disclosure Day.
Yeah.
Now, when does Disclosure Day come out?
So it's out next, is it the 12th of June?
Right.
I'm not, two weeks' time. Yeah, 2 weeks'
time. And this
time.
Will be our this will be the tentpole film of the summer.
This is the massive film of the summer we're all looking forward to. And the reason why I say that is because it's Steven Spielberg. The last time he released a film was 2022 and it was called The Fablemans. I think we all expected more from it because it was supposed to be like loosely based on his story. Mm. This, he's going back to what he knows. It's, well, not that he doesn't know his own story.
Because he totally knows aliens from another world.
But when it comes to cinema, I mean, we had E.T., we had Close Encounters of a Third Kind. All we know about it is he says, if you found out we weren't alone, if someone showed you, proved it to you, would that frighten you? We know it stars Emily Blunt, Josh O'Connor, Colin Firth, Eve Hewson is in it as well. So, but the reason why we're talking about it, we're not here to review it today, but a few reviewers have seen it and we always get a bit nervous, but the feedback has been fantastic. People are saying that this is his best film in 20 years. They're not only going on about the film, they're going on about Emily Blunt's performance. It's not often, although if you look at Oppenheimer and Barbie, I'm going against what I'm about to say, but it's not often that in a summer blockbuster you will get Oscar nominations.
Yeah.
And people are saying Emily Blunt could see an Oscar nomination for her role in this.
Okay.
They're calling it the funny, the director's weirdest, and says it's the X-File meets the Bible type script.
Okay, so weird.
Yeah, and people are saying as well, do not, and Zara and I were talking about this too, we tend not to go in and watch the trailer because usually everything's shown in the trailer. I have seen this trailer I still don't know what's going on. But try and not read up about this film before you go see it. The critics are saying that the joy in it is experiencing it for the first time on your own.
Okay. But is it, my sense is Disclosure Day means something's disclosed to people about aliens.
Didn't the White House release something there recently?
They've half released things, but the good stuff is still being held back.
Yeah, so timing could be good for this though.
Well, I mean, I don't think Donald Trump is going to start disclosing stuff to help Steven Spielberg.
No.
It's more like, you know, if there's more pressure about the Epstein files, he might release it then.
Oh, yeah. So he might indeed. No, but look, people...
These critics, they're not like, you know, pals of Steven Spielberg who, you know, have to say nice things about it.
No, so we've got like Collider. We've got actual industry critics. So like Collider, Collider said, in a shock to absolutely no one, Steven Spielberg has delivered another towering home run. I could go on and on about what I love, but I was lucky enough to see the movie knowing almost nothing. Do the same. The one thing I will say is Emily Blunt is incredible. Other people are saying this is absolutely phenomenal. It's a roller coaster ride blending chase film, love story and mystery, all wrapped in sci-fi wonder. So I think this has something for everyone. Even though I looked at the runtime and went, oh no. Are you going to do that to me? The runtime is 2 hours 25. But I said that about Oppenheimer and I went, I'm not going to go see that. But then I went and saw it in the cinema because I knew I wouldn't watch it at home. And that's what I love about this. The longer films are almost making us go to the cinema because at home we can fast forward, we can do something else.
Go make a cup of tea.
Yeah. 2 weeks time, it'll be in cinemas and you can make up your own mind.
Really looking forward to that. Yeah. Let's find out, is it going to be as good as Tuner? Here's a clip.
Hi, nice to see you again.
Hey.
Hello, Deuce.
I don't know her name.
I'm Ruthie.
Hello, Ruthie. I'm Harry Horowitz. You can call me Harry. Just don't call me late for dinner. Vroom-pump.
Steal that line from my grandmother?
No, I never stole anything in my life. This is Nicky. He is my tuning apprentice. He's more like my nephew, though we're not related. And I'll tell you one thing. He is very eligible, but he has a hearing condition, as you can see from his plugs, which are not hearing aids, although that's a common mistake. He's not being rude. It's doctor's orders. And did I mention? He is very eligible.
Harry, what? Please stop.
Here, you want a Boston cream?
Just good fuel for class. Thank you so much.
What sort of class?
Advanced composition.
Did you hear that, Nikki?
She's advanced. Yeah, I heard her play. She's good.
Yeah? It's high praise coming from this guy. He's, believe it or not, a virtuoso.
Wow, an eligible virtuoso, huh?
Well, actually, yes, he was a child prodigy, but he doesn't play anymore because of his hearing condition. Maybe you can inspire him.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Harry. She clearly has to go.
I do. I gotta go.
That's all right. Okay, so walk her to class.
She doesn't want me to walk her to class.
That's unnecessary. Thank you.
The menschy thing to do is at least carry her book.
Harry, it's not 1950.
I can carry my own books.
What do you mean it's not 1950? It's not such a big deal. Just carry her books to class.
Okay, I don't know what the music for was at the end there. That was so that sounds like kind of a Goodfellas meets some sort of music thing.
Yeah. Whiplash, but with piano. Yes. Like the pianist or something like that. Maybe not so much. So basically, Dustin Hoffman has told us everything we need to know about the film.
That was Dustin Hoffman there, was it?
That was Dustin Hoffman, who, as he describes his friend Nicky, played by Leo Woodall, he says, he's like my nephew, but we're not related. So Dustin Hoffman's character is really good friends with Nicky's father, who's passed away, and he's kind of like an adopted kind of dad for him. So the two of them work together in New York City tuning pianos around the city. So a lot of like montages of them going to like these really decadent houses where like they're tuning pianos. Now, the thing that I found quite strange about this is that when they would show up to people's homes to tune the piano, a lot of people would just have no idea that they were on the way. And they would be like, who are you? Like, who are you guys? And they're like, we're the piano tuners. And then they'd be like, well, no one plays the piano here. But actually, Billy Joel is playing at a, you know, benefit here tomorrow. So that's actually handy. But yeah, they just show up and people are like, okay, I guess you can come in. So that's how we kind of get acquainted with Dustin Hoffman and Leo Woodall. Then there is a day where Nicky, as we heard there, he has hyperacusis, which is a real condition. He describes it as being allergic to loud noises. So great that he lives in New York City. And he wears these like in-ear kind of buds to protect his ears and then headphones on top because he's super sensitive to sound. And that kind of comes back throughout the film. And as Dustin Hoffman said, that led to him not being able to play piano anymore. But he has perfect pitch, so he's great for this job. So one day he's tuning a piano in a house. He hears something kind of suspicious, thinks someone has broken in, goes upstairs and sees three lads who are kind of going at a safe with like all sorts of equipment. Then it is revealed that with Nicky's acute kind of hearing, he's able to break safes because he goes close up to the
and you can hear the tumblers.
Exactly.
All. Yeah.
So he gets involved with these guys because he needs to raise money because Dustin Hoffman's character gets into some health difficulties. So Nicky wants to kind of pay him back for, like, you know, nurturing him as a kid, giving him this apprenticeship, and he wants to clear his medical bills. So he's doing that as he's like helping these guys rob safes across New York City. So that's the main kind of plot. Then we have Havana Rose Liu, who we heard there. People will see her in Power Ballad as well today. She's this concert pianist. She's working really hard to get this like apprenticeship with composer Marius Meisner, played by Jean Reno. And they, of course, fall in love. But there's a bit of a kind of tricky dynamic with there because she's quite mean to him a lot of the time. Like, he's actually quite a nice guy and he goes through a lot.
Maybe she's having the odd glass of
Whispering Angel. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I do think so. I know from experience. But yeah, so that kind of element to it is just there to serve a plot point that comes in later that causes a bit of trouble for poor old Nicky. Now, as I said, I wish this had been a TV series because it's 107 minutes long. It tries to do too many things. You've got crime, you've got comedy, you've got thriller. Like, there's actually quite scary parts in this where I was a bit nervous in the cinema. You've got romance, all this kind of stuff, the buddy kind of element to it with Dustin and Leo. It could have just been, some things could have been sacrificed. They try too much. But in saying that, I did like how it brought me back to like the early 2000s. Like, and I was not surprised then to see that Daniel Rohr's writing partner is a guy, Robert Ramsey, who wrote Intolerable Cruelty, which is a great early 2000s film. So it has that. People are saying it's like the Thomas Crane Affair, the Safdie's Brothers in Chill Out Mode. It's not that stressful. Like, there's maybe one too many like safe kind of cracking montages for that. This is also Leo Woodall's first time leading a feature film. Like, we've seen him a lot in White Lotus, One Fine Day. He was the love interest in the recent Bridget Jones film. He does actually a decent job of carrying this because he's so much to do. Is he someone that I was rooting for all the time? He has a sympathetic face, but I just couldn't really have cared like what happened to him.
Okay.
But good performance from him, given that this is his first time doing a project like this.
And you're acting beside Dustin Hoffman.
Absolutely.
So it's very, you know, and that must be tricky enough.
The big element to this that I thought was great, and it reminded me of The Sound of Metal as well, the film where Riz Ahmed is the drummer, loses his hearing. The sound design in this is amazing. So Johnny Byrne did it. He was involved in the sound, or the zone of interest. And they do a really good job of kind of giving the audience the experience of what Nicky experiences with his hearing. And that goes between like when he has the earbuds in, has the headphones on, like shutting out the world, but then also kind of like how the loud sounds really affect him. So for that reason, it's good to see it in a cinema. Like, don't wait till it's streamed.
Yeah.
And I did see it in a full cinema screen and people were laughing constantly. Like, having a great time. So it's a good little cinema trip.
Yeah, good. I'm looking forward to that. That's our lot for today. Thanks to Zara, Serena and Linda.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks in a mine.
The martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.